how do we not lose ourselves in relationship? I think it is that awareness time, right? Like time to ourselves or journaling or whatever your practice is to go empty out the head, quieten all the voices around me, you know, take off all of the conditioning and who am I and what do I want? And what do I enjoy? And what am I here to do? And what do I want to do with this life I have? And then finding ways to express that. And I mean, if you're in a relationship with somebody and you keep hitting that brick wall when you do show your vulnerability and you do communicate, you're shut down over and over and over again, or, you know, put back in your box in some way, then I would consider whether that's a relationship that's going to be able to evolve and grow.
Hello and welcome to Curious Ones podcast by Andara. I'm Yael Ginsberg, the host of the podcast, a yoga and meditation teacher and philosophy lover. Each week you will hear eye-opening interviews with the different teachers of the Andara Yoga Institute, located in beautiful Baja, Mexico, along with other teachers that pass through here. This life-changing knowledge shared through authentic, heartfelt communication will help you live a happier, more fulfilled, and connected life. Let's dive in. Hello, welcome back to Curious Ones podcast by Andara. I'm Yael Ginsberg. I am so happy to have my guest today, Carly Anna. Carly is a energetics and mindset therapist, a personal alignment mentor, a connective communication specialist and mama, and she's also known as the honest therapist. So welcome to the podcast, Carly.
Oh my gosh, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be chatting with you today.
Me too. So when I was thinking about what we could speak about in this conversation, it really came up to me that what I would love to hear about regarding what is happening in my personal life is to speak about relationships. And then I was diving in a little bit more about your work, your website, your Instagram, and all of that. And I saw that's actually one of your specialties. So then I realized that that's perfect. And the reason why I think it's such an important topic, I feel like it's even maybe a little bit needless to say, but I'll say it anyway. I find that relationships are one of the most important aspects of our lives. And having said that, they're also the most challenging aspect of our lives.
Yeah.
We feel the most satisfaction, the most joy, the most connection to ourselves and to others through our relationships. And yet they are the biggest mirrors, the biggest activators, and sometimes the biggest points of pain and challenge. So maybe you can shed a light on that and give your opinion on why that is and how we even start to approach our relationships with ourselves and with others.
Yeah, it is such a broad topic and a very, oh gosh, complex and layered space to be working in and to be humaning in, right? You know, I am also, as I guide my clients and, you know, have conversations with my friends, I'm also walking through my own relationship stuff, you know, healing, disconnection, abandonment, like there's so much. So I guess as you were talking then, the things that popped into my mind that I thought might be really helpful to sort of give some context around who I am and what I do is to let your audience know that I was born fascinated by human behavior and in particular how humans relate to one another. And I remember being quite a small girl, and I, you know, I was always sort of the one observing relationships. So I'd be sort of in the corner. I was a lot quieter than I am now. And a little bit of a serious sort of sort. But I was always observing and watching and taking in information about how people were communicating and how people were not communicating or not communicating well, and body language and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, I was also born into a family with a lot of intergenerational trauma, which so many of us are, and into a family with mental health challenges and a lot of estrangement in family relationships. And, you know, I often sort of joke now with my friends and I was meant to be born into that family because I learned so much about dysfunction in relationships. Mm-hmm. And I now obviously I now see it as a beautiful, like, gift that I now have that I've gone through all of that to now be able to help others, you know, navigate that space. We're all wounded healers really at the end of the day in this kind of work, right? So yeah, relationships, we are herd animals, right? We are meant to be in relationship. We literally die if we don't have human connection and touch and relating. We are biologically wired to want to be accepted and to, you know, want to be part of the herd because it, you know, biologically, instinctually, physiologically, it's unsafe to not be. So I guess, you know, this fascination has continued throughout my life, and that's why I went and studied psychology and social work. I got my social work degree. I then worked in, over here we called it child protection services. So, you know, I would literally go into the homes of families that were incredibly dysfunctional and very marginalized and, you know, try to bring connection and bring healing. You know, I look back over my career of nearly 20 something years and I think, gosh, I can see how my gifts from my childhood and my understanding about relationships has just, yeah, led me to where I am today. And, you know, the work I do now is really to help people have firstly a relationship, as you said, with themselves. Like, who am I? You know, who am I? What do I desire? What are my boundaries? What's my yes? What's my no? What do I want from this life? How do I respond? How do I react? What are my activations, or, you know, a lot of people call them triggers. I call them activations. What are my triggers? Where do I need to heal myself? Where do I want to heal myself? Like, that for me is number one, is that relationship with self. And then I believe when we have a really beautiful and grounded understanding of who we are, we can then seek out or attract whatever you believe in, the relationships that will nourish us. We can offer so much more to other people. We know what our gifts are and our talents are. We know where we've got room for, you know, improvement. Yeah. So it's huge. You know, when you ask me, talk about relationships, I'm like, whew, like, it's so, so big and so impactful. And I think we're all just on a journey to, yeah, understand our early childhood relationships and how they impact on our adult relationships. Cause we carry those imprints throughout our life as well. Yeah.
Definitely. So what do you think? I really would love to speak about some of the challenges that we have in relationships, because I think that a lot of times we have challenges in communication between different sides. Ego is a big part of it. Like, no, I'm not gonna write them first. I'm not gonna be the one to reach out. They should do it, and then nobody does. What do you feel are some of the blocks to relationships? And I really would love to speak about creating new
meaningful, lasting relationships with friends and family members? I guess like anybody.
So, you know, communication, yes. And I know everyone kind of knows that, right? Like every client that comes to me for either single sessions or sometimes I actually do couples sessions, like, oh, our communication is poor. We know that. But I really love to like, obviously look like go through the layers of the actual communication. I'm very practical in my therapy. I'm like, okay, tell me what you said and then what you said and what happened there and what happened in your body and what you assumed, right? So one of the key things I think is to really become very self-aware of when we make assumptions about someone's actions or something that they said. We read into it, we create a story around it that might not actually be true, might actually be fiction. I don't know if you've experienced that, Yael, but where,
of course,
you know, oh, he hasn't messaged me, so I'll make this whole story about why and what that means about me and what that means about him, right? Like all this stuff. So when I, you know, when I work with clients, I always talk about you've got your own narrative, your own stuff, that your baggage, your woundings, your stories. The other person has the same. And then in between, there's like this third space, this energetic space where all this assumption and made up fictional stuff happens. And so I think your, you know, your question about how do we create really beautiful connective relationships, a lot of it is stopping ourselves and going, actually, what's real here? What am I making up here? What am I reading into here? What is reality and what is this amazing brain that's just creating stories to try to maybe protect me from being hurt or rejected? Because again, humans hurt animals. We don't want to be hurt. We don't want to be rejected. We don't want to be abandoned. And so subconsciously we can create some really very clever ways to avoid those things. Yeah. I don't know if this is resonating with you or your audience, but I remember doing this before. Definitely. I found my life partner. I would, you know, make a lot of stories up about the people in my life and friends and what they're not doing for me and what they're, you know, what they are doing and what they're doing wrong and what they're thinking about me.
That's exactly what I'm thinking about, because for me, what comes up is my expectation of how a friend should act. And then more often than not, I find that I'm disappointed from my friends, from them not doing something or not doing something. So yeah. I would really love to hear about what you think, like, where is the line with that? Because on one hand, I feel like there is a way to be a good friend, you know, to be there, to be trustworthy, to reach out and things like that. And also, you know, spend time together, make it a priority to spend time together, etc. And then there's also taking into account the person that is in front of us. And as you said, their life story, what they're dealing with at the moment. Maybe it's even just their friendship style. That's really one of the biggest challenges for me.
Yeah, expectations are really tricky and can place a lot of expectation and pressure on the other person that hasn't maybe been clarified or explained. Right. So I'm really big on, of course, you need to be in a really beautiful, you know, regulated state to do this, but I'm really big on actually saying what's in your heart and less of what's in your head. So meeting people with your heart. So if you have a friend that you feel isn't showing up for you in the way that you would like, or meeting this, you know, this expectation that you've created, you know, the first question I always ask, have you told them? Have you actually shared with them that you love them and care for them and you love your friendship and you want it to continue, but this is what you need from the relationship and that this is, you know, something that you really crave from them? Or like, have you actually gone to them and shared and had that conversation? And I find most of the time we don't, right? We hope that they understand what our expectation is. We hope that they deliver, but it really is unfair on the other person, because if they have no idea that that's how you want them to be a friend and that's how you need them to show up, it kind of sets them up for failure because they have no idea, right? They're just like, oh, I thought I was doing the right things and I thought I was showing up in the way that you wanted. Whereas in fact, they're just showing up in the way that they can generally, right? Yeah. So I'm really big on like actually expressing. And I have so many beautiful clients that message me and say, oh, I want to say this to my friend. I want to share this. And they say all these beautiful things to me as their therapist or in our Voxer chats. And I'm like, just go and say that to them. Like, it's beautiful. You've actually got the words. Just go and share that with them with your heart open, right? Just share. Now, if that person says, you know what, I'm in a stage or space in my life, I can't actually meet that expectation, I can't give you that, then I guess together you can make a plan around that, right? Like, oh, okay, well, you're going to be my friend that I do this and this with, but maybe not the friend that I confide in or come to when I'm really distraught or distressed. And is that okay? Like, can we still make this work? That's some suggestions I always have. And I think, and that's worked well for me in my friendship circle. I know that I have friends who have expected me to share everything with them all the time. And that's just actually not my personality. I'm a very internal processor, not an external processor. And we've had to have conversations about that. You know, I love you and I know you're there for me and I'll ask for help when I need it, but I'm not going to ring you every single day about every issue I have. That's just not me. Right. We've had beautiful conversations. So it's like, oh, I know that I can get this from that friend and this from that friend. And we're setting some really beautiful and realistic expectations that have actually been discussed and communicated. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that's, yeah. And I find it happens in intimate relationships too, of course. You know, like expectations that my partner will do this and do that and do it in this way. And I'm like, have you told them that? Have you actually shared that with them? Because how can they live up to that or fulfill that if you've never actually told them that's what you're desiring?
Yeah, I completely agree and I love that. So what would you say for somebody who wants to share and understands the importance of it? How should we approach it? What is the right way to start, the right way to frame things? Because it's a very thin line in not blaming the other person, not demanding, you know, making it a pleasant conversation and making the other person really understand us and getting on the same side.
Yeah, I get asked this a lot. And this is why something that I actually do is I'm very big on actually helping a lot of the women that I work with practice the words before they go and actually have the conversation, like giving them a chance to sort of, you know, share it in a bit of a fake setting with me. And what I find is exactly what you just did then, my dear, which is you actually just shared what I would suggest you share, which would be something like, oh, I'm feeling a little bit nervous about sharing this with you because I know there's a line here and, but I love you and I cherish our relationship and I just feel like this is on my heart and I want to share it, but I want you to know that it's not me putting expectations or pressure on you, but it's just me being open about what I need from this relationship, right? So exactly the words you just said, I'm like, how could you word it like that? Because I truly believe if you met with someone who cared about you, and we do have to always have discernment, right? Like there's some people in our lives that are not ready to have these kind of conversations, or it's not emotionally safe to maybe. But if you're going to meet with a friend who really does care about you and you meet like that, I think they'll be like, oh yeah, okay, let's have this conversation. You know, I want to know how you're feeling. So I think sometimes even just literally verbalizing our nervousness or our fear of, you know, I don't want to hurt you. That's not my intention. If we verbalize that, I think that can just create such beautiful connection. And just put everyone sort of at ease and just, yeah, everyone kind of takes a breath and goes, oh, okay. You know, it's very different to if you said, I want to meet with you on Friday for a coffee because I want to talk to you about our relationship and I want to tell you what I need from you. Can you feel the difference?
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. I think it's really a beautiful distinction because it sets up the intention for the conversation and just verbalizing it makes both sides aware that we're trying to come together and have an understanding rather than I'm trying to force myself or my wants and needs on you.
Yes. Yes. What I always teach people to do as well, and I try to practice this myself, again, we're all human and I don't do this perfectly all the time, but I also try to go into those conversations with very little expectation of an outcome that, you know, that I want, trying to go into it very open with this could go either way. You know, like I can't go in with that kind of even energetic expectation that it's going to turn out the way I want it to, that this person's going to say, oh yes, I'll do this and this and I'll be your friend forever, or, you know, I'll be your intimate partner, or I'll stay with you or whatever. Trying to go in really open to give that other person full agency to decide their place in that relationship or not. So I think that's really important, and it's very human and often very subconscious, but we go in with like, I'm going to get them to do this.
Yeah. Because we want, I mean, especially like this resonates for me with romantic relationships. You might want the relationship to continue. You want certain things to happen or not to happen. And it's not so easy to say, okay, I'll let go of all my expectations and let it just be something, because they might just say, I can't do that and leave. And actually that happened to me. I came to a conversation and said, I need a few things to be present. And the guy I was dating said, I can't give you that. And actually the relationship ended.
So how did you
really let go of that expectation or that desire?
Well, I guess my question is, you know, looking back now, can you see now that that is a good way, or it needed to end like that? So I think what we often do is we're so scared of those conversations and that potential rejection, because again, herd animals, you know, and our limbic brain is like, don't abandon me. Don't leave me alone. I think we go in with that fear. And what I see a lot of people, and in particular people who identify as female, they go in and because they're scared of that rejection, they dilute, they edit, they hold back, they don't fully express their desires and what they actually need and what they actually want. And so thus the cycle continues, and then resentment builds and, you know, these issues fester and grow, and, you know, it becomes even more damaging and disconnective. So yeah, it hurts when the other person goes, actually, I'm out, I can't do that. But I guess, you know, in hindsight, we look back and go, well, that relationship, that's where it needed to go. And maybe it's better that it actually ended that way and that early. I remember having a really, really vulnerable and scary conversation with my husband last year. We've been together 17, we've just gone on 17 years, 10 years married. And we were both really unhappy. Yeah, I know. It's pretty amazing. Where did that time go? I still feel 21. It's crazy. But, you know, we were both very disconnected and not happy in the relationship. And it was terrifying to go to him and say, things need to change or I'm thinking about leaving. And to go in knowing that I would be okay either way if he turned around and said, yeah, I'm out, which is like, that's really big, especially with two children and, you know, joint property and being together for so long. I had to go into that conversation being prepared for any outcome. And that took me weeks and weeks and weeks of nervous system work, journaling, talking it out with my therapist and, you know, and some really beautiful mentors that I have, reading some books, listening to podcasts and just figuring out how I wanted to have that conversation and how I wanted to go into it energetically. And yeah, like with no like expectation that, oh gosh, I want him to stay or go, just really neutral. It was terrifying, terrifying, but I knew it had to happen for, cause I, you know, I care about him so much and I want him to be happy, whether that's with me or not. And this is what happens in relationships too, right? Where you can become like really enmeshed and kind of lose sight of the other person's happiness. And I don't know about you, but I don't want to be with someone who's unhappy with me, like being with me or being in a friendship with me. I don't want to hold anyone hostage to that. So yeah, that was my personal example of having to walk my talk and really practice what I share and teach and guide people through, like actually navigating that in my own marriage was really massive. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for opening up and sharing about that. And I think it's really important because it's so important to realize and share that these conversations are actually freaking scary. And yeah, showing up in this way is so, so hard. And even somebody like you who has been working in therapy for 20 years plus, it took you a lot of internal work and processing just to be able to show up in this conversation. I would love to ask you about coming into a conversation like this. What was your intention? Because if the intention was not staying together, what did you, how did you prepare yourself internally for that?
Yeah. So, you know, a little bit of my backstory that was also being activated in this experience was just a recurring incidences of abandonment over my life from people in my family. So in particular, males. So, you know, my dad left when I was 18. He started a whole new family and didn't speak to me for nearly 10 years. And I reached out to him and we have reconciled. But that's still a really big activation for me of being abandoned by men. And so, or relationship breakdown with men. And so this is a man that I've been with him since I was 23. So 17 years. I'm like, he's never abandoned me. He's been the most stable, the most consistent. He has healed me in so many ways. And yet still, you know, this little wounding is still, it's still there. And you know, I often talk to people about this little side tangent. I often talk about, you know, I don't know that you ever fully get rid of all the stuff. I think that sometimes we're sold this dream of like fully healing and releasing all the things all the time. I don't know. I think that we learn how to manage and carry and it softens over time. But yeah, these different scenarios as we walk through this world will activate these things. So yeah, that was big. That was coming up for me. What I decided was, and I really truly believe that that everyone in any relationship needs to do this, is I had to really sit with what I wanted and what I needed outside of social conditioning, outside of fear of all the things like, how am I going to pay for a house by myself as a single mother? What are people going to think if I'm the one that ends the relationship? Like all of this noise, I had to sit with, what do I want? What do I want? What's going to make me happy? And I was really, you know, we were just in a really awful, unhappy, disconnected space, as I said. So I went into it having to already work through, yeah, what happens if we do break up or separate? Will I be okay? And I had to look at, okay, what supports would I need? How would I resource myself? And then, okay, if we stay together, what do we also need to do? Like, what do I need in that? Well, actually, we both probably need to go to therapy and we need to prioritize date nights again and connection time. And, you know, we need to relook at how we've got a bit of out of balance with household jobs and things. Like, you know, like I really looked at what's going to nourish me and what's going to be important for me to continue either way. So then I could go to that conversation really clear on, I'll be okay no matter what happens, with the ultimate intention being that we're both happy, that we're both enjoying our lives, right? And I had so much in my heart around him being happy as well and him doing his own work to get back to that space too. But with not an expectation and not doing it for him and not rescuing and not, you know, being the savior for him, but just with a beautiful intention in my heart that I hoped he would go, yeah, I need to look at some stuff too, you know, because he did. He did need to. So, yeah, I think that
we all need to.
Yeah, we all, yeah. So what else with that conversation? And the other thing I always talk to people about is, you know, actually creating a safe space for that conversation to be held in. So it wasn't a conversation to just have across the dinner table with the children there, you know, like half-hearted. It wasn't a conversation to have when we only had 10 minutes to have it. It wasn't like literally what space do I want us to have that conversation in? When, you know, how can I create the space so my nervous system feels really as calm as possible? So that again, I can stay in the room energetically, like instead of dissociating, because a lot of us do that, right? Stay in the space, stay grounded, say what I need to say, say what I want to say. Yeah. So I often say to people, make sure that you even maybe book in the time, you know, like, so it's not just had on the fly. There's some real intention and there's some containership of it. Containment of it. It's a little bit planned. Cause I do know that our nervous systems can just hijack those conversations so easily.
Hey, I'm quickly interrupting the episode to extend an invitation. If you are interested in deepening into any of the subjects we talk about on the podcast, we offer many different experiences on our beautiful grounds here in Baja, Mexico. From 9-day modules such as sound healing and yoga nidra to breath and meditation, as well as 200 or 300-hour yoga teacher trainings and many different shorter retreats. Check out our website, yandara.com, to see all the information about the different experiences. Let's get back to the episode.
Yeah, I think also planning is really important because you kind of have the time to prepare yourself internally for it.
Yeah. 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 So if you know that, you know, you're going to have this beautiful connective conversation on Saturday afternoon at 4:00, yes, there can be some, you know, oh my gosh, it's coming. But there is this beautiful space. I know that time is set aside. So what do I need to do? Do I need to go for a walk beforehand and get grounded or meditate or whatever, you know, drink tea or journal, or do I need to talk to a confidant just beforehand? And again, what kind of space do I want to do it? Do I want it on neutral ground or, you know, like it just gives you a sense of, I guess, calm and potential, like, yeah, this is sort of container that we're going to meet and we're going to have this conversation. But I can tell you that's really nerve-wracking and scary.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
definitely. I love that you mentioned kind of rehearsing it before and thinking about what are the words that you want to use. I think that's very helpful also for those of us who might be really held back by the fear of really expressing ourselves and our needs, which I think is very, very common in relationships. It's actually one of the things I wanted to speak with you about, because I know from myself and from many of my girlfriends, I think women have a tendency to kind of let go of themselves in a relationship and kind of make themselves adapt to the man. And I'm sure men do that as well in some form in relationships. Mm. But I would love to hear you speak a little bit about, how do we stay true to ourselves in relationships? How do we really find the space and the confidence in ourselves to express our needs, to have a voice mm-hmm. and kind of be firm in who we are, and yet find the balance of making compromises in relationships and finding the middle ground between the sides?
Mm. So my answer to that is, the way we do that is we awkwardly stumble and fall flat on our face and practice and dust ourselves off and try again, because none of us were taught how to be emotionally articulate as little people. Very, very few people, I will say, not none of us. You know, for most of us, we were raised in environments where our emotions were, yeah, shut down or suppressed or just not welcome. And we all had that, you know, reconfirmed in our schooling. And then, yeah, we've got intergenerational stuff with women with expression, right? Speaking our truth, speaking up, being persecuted for that. So many layers. So I truly, truly believe, and this comes from many, many years of my own practice with communication, because I was a very poor communicator when I first met my husband. I would yell. I would go 0 to 100. I would talk over him. I would lash out, because that was what I saw role modeled to me by my parents. So how we walk through that, and this is what I also see with all my clients, is we just have to practice, and we have to be willing to be really bad at it, and we have to be willing to be very vulnerable. And I think that a lot of us that are in this space, that are trying to improve ourselves, are trying to learn about ourselves and how to connect more in our relationships, I think we have to go first. And I can tell you that sometimes I don't want to go first. I want him to go first. I want him to have the conversation. I want him to bring it up. But if both of our intentions are a loving, intimate relationship, or if it's a friendship situation, the same thing, connection and friendship and support, if we both have the same intention, that doesn't matter who goes first, you know, really. Like, so going first, having a go, stuffing up your words, apologizing, you know, like I think that's the only way. And then what happens over time is you build up this muscle memory of, oh, when I word things like this, it comes across better. And when I approach it like this, I'm heard and they hear me more. And, you know, like, it's just really, I think the only way is through practice. If we'd all been taught how to do this as a school subject, we would all have amazing connective communication going on in our relationships. Yeah. Imagine if this was actually a whole subject at school that we did for 12 years or whatever. I don't know how many years you guys studied.
The world would look completely different.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm a mum of two boys, and I have really intentionally focused on them being able to articulate their emotions, that all of their emotions are welcome, their anger, their sadness, their whatever, in a respectful way. I'm just like, oh, God, I want to raise some men that have nervous systems that can hold emotion and process emotion for themselves, but also hold the emotion of the feminine, right? The feminine storm, the feminine rage, the feminine flow. Men that can hold that and not run away and freak out and be like, oh God, she's crazy, right? Which is the narrative that my husband grew up with. So it's a really big, strong focus with my boys. Yeah. As much as possible. Yeah. So I think, how do we not lose ourselves in relationship? It's very easy to do. I think it is that awareness time, right? Like time to ourselves or journaling or whatever your practice is to go empty out the head, quieten all the voices around me, you know, take off all of the conditioning and what, who am I and what do I want and what do I enjoy and what am I here to do and what do I want to do with this life I have? And then finding, yeah, finding ways to express that. And I mean, if you're in a relationship with somebody and you keep hitting that brick wall when you do show your vulnerability and you do communicate, you're shut down over and over and over again, or, you know, put back in your box in some way, then I would consider whether that's a relationship that's going to be able to evolve and grow. Yeah. So, you know, I do this work full time. I love it. I'm so aware of my internal workings and I've had all my own therapy and I, you know all the things. And I still, you know, over COVID and the pandemic did lose connection because I was, you know, remote learning my children, teaching my children who were home from school in lockdowns. We're down in Melbourne area, which is the most lockdown city in the world, right? So in that 2 years, we all lost who we were. I'm so grateful that I pulled it back really quick, you know, like I realized and we worked on it very fast and very quick, but I was like, wow, that happened quite easily. So I get it. I do get it. It can be really challenging.
I love that you keep mentioning that really the work is first to check in with ourselves and understand what we really want, what we need, who we want to be in the world, how we want to interact with other people and how we want them to interact with us. And then finding kind and connecting ways and loving ways to communicate that with them. And then really having teammates, because it's so important to have people with you that have a similar goal, that are willing to do the work with you. Because if you're the only one doing the work, it's not going to happen. So that's,
yeah, it's really super, it's super challenging. Yeah. And I don't believe that we can get everything from one person, right? I don't believe we can get everything that we need for our soul's nourishment, our mind stimulation, our physical needs from one person. But there definitely does still need to be evolution and connection and a willingness to, you know, encourage each other and cheer each other on. I mean, my husband has no interest in anything like therapy, like stuff, psychology, human design, the horoscopes and all the things, the planets. He has no interest at all, but he cheers me on. He celebrates me. He goes, that's great, honey. Like, wow, I'm so happy for you. And I'm like, cool. Like that's all I need from him. Right. But yeah, I think we need to be very mindful as well in relationships that we don't expect to get everything from one person. That can be a real pressure for that person to deliver and offer us everything.
I completely agree with you. I think that's definitely important because honestly, life isn't about just being with one person for everything. It's really about the diversity of our different connections and relationships in all their different forms. And I've been really realizing that more and more over the years, that even in friendships, it's not about having the same type of friendship with every person, as you kind of mentioned before. There's different types of connections and each one of them has its purpose and its time where it's needed or that it's more suitable for you. So I have softened into that because I used to expect all my friends to be like my best friends and have deep, meaningful conversations with them. And I've really changed my mind about that because now I realize that really there's so many different types of friendships that exist. And that's a good thing.
Yeah. And every relationship has, you know, a timeline of how long they'll be in your life for. And I guess I've had some real hurts in female friendships over the years. There was sort of a pattern there for a while of just some of my friends just totally ghosting me and disappearing. And that was really painful to walk myself through and to analyze, you know, as we do, we overanalyze, what did I do? What did I say? What did I do wrong? And I guess as I get older, I just go, okay, well, that friendship was just meant to last for that amount of time. And that's how it was meant to go. But yeah, it's almost like we carry, you know, you think in primary school or secondary school, or high school, you know, yeah, you've got, they're your best friend or they're your best friend, you know, like you've got these titles and then we carry that into adulthood and it's like, oh, no, that doesn't quite translate into adulthood. So yeah, I think having a team, having resources, having different people to go to for different things at different times, also acknowledging that everyone's walking through their life and, you know, different experiences as well. So not everyone's available to us at all times. That can be helpful.
So that kind of takes me into the topic I wanted to speak about, and we kind of already are speaking about it, but boundaries, setting boundaries and really placing limits for ourselves. And I'll share that for me right now, what's happening in my life is that I am caretaking for a sick family member. And it's really, really hard for me to find the line of how much I can give while trying to really be there for them as much as I can, but not losing myself and my life and what makes me feel good because I am a giver. For me, it's like my default is to give everything I can. And let's say in the last 2 days that I felt completely empty to the point that yesterday I actually did not do anything the whole day. And I just really needed to take this time to replenish myself. And I realized that it's because of a lack of boundary there. So
yeah.
What advice? Oh, do you have?
Yeah. Again, such a common one with women, especially in the self-development space. Most of us are overgivers and carers and nurturers and saviors and rescuers. That's why we're often drawn to podcasts like yours and, you know, different work that we kind of do to help others. So there's a couple of things that I love to share around boundaries. And I actually, I learned this really early in my social work career when I was learning about child development, and I was learning about how children learn independence. So we're looking at childhood milestones and how, at what point did children start to sort of venture away from their caregiver, explore the world and return? And at what point do they explore and not return? And it was just fascinating to me because what we learned was the importance of boundaries. And we learned that humans thrive knowing what the boundaries are, knowing what I'm going to use the word expectations, but it's a little bit of a different context to what we were talking about previously. But what are the expectations and what can I do and how far can I venture and what can I ask for and what can I not? And so it's interesting now when I work with adults, I talk about it in this sort of light. Okay, so if you're caring for a family member who's unwell, or you're caring for, you know, you're caring for anyone, we always want to ask ourselves what's actually going to benefit this person that I'm caring for. So is me swooping in and doing absolutely everything for them actually helping them to become independent again or to heal or to, right, stand on their own two feet at some point. So is, and maybe this isn't in your case, but I often think when we try to prop up friends, you know, and get them through hard times, we can only do that for so long. And then when we're gone, when we're back in our own life and we think they're fine, often they fall down again because they haven't built resilience because we were there doing it all for them, right? Propping them up, cheering them on, sorting things out. So that I think hopefully that's helpful. I think that it's helpful to always say, well, by setting this boundary, how am I actually helping this person? And what happens there when we have a really clear and respectful and healthy boundary is, of course, we can then nourish ourselves again, fill up our own cup, have some space, have some time. And I, you know, in my own personal life, having a mother with mental health that I rescued her until I was 26 years old, I was the one that took her to the appointments and picked her up off the floor and got her dressed when she was, you know, really, really struggling. And I was the one that fixed up all of the division that she created in our family. And I became the mediator and I did it all for 26 years. And then I stopped and went, this is only enabling this. This is only helping her stay in this space. This is actually not benefiting her at all. And if my intention is for her to grow and evolve and heal in some way, or at least manage her mental health, we need to change this up a bit. Like, there needs to be another plan here because I'm just, yeah, in rescuer mode. So I think that that can be, I guess that's my first point with boundaries. Boundaries need to be a lovely soft energy, not a barbed wire fence energy as well. So sometimes we can create boundaries to prove a point and to stay, I don't know, in a space of that kind of heavy guarded energy as well. So I'm always just checking in with, is this a boundary that sort of serves them and you, or is this a boundary to keep people out and to, you know, prove a point?
Yeah, I'm right.
Yeah. I will not help you, you know, like that sort of energy of like, no, you were mean to me 20 years ago and I am not going to be open to you again. And in some cases that, you know, that kind of, that can serve a purpose, I think, for a small amount of time, especially in really toxic or abusive relationships. But it's just something to check in with there as well. The other thing that I haven't really mentioned in your podcast today is that I've actually studied human design, which is an incredible system of differentiation. I don't know if you have we talked about that. I don't know if you're aware of human design.
I've heard of it. I'm very curious about it, but I don't know much. So feel free to explain, share, speak about it.
Yeah. Oh, it's just like probably needed a whole other podcast episode. But what I often see when I look at people,
about that, actually.
When I look at people's human design body graph, what we notice is that a lot of the population have what we call an open emotional solar plexus. So what that means is that most of us, especially in the world that we work in and live in, we're very empathic and very open to people's emotions. We like absorb them, right? Like we can sense things. We can, you know, if someone walks in the room and they're angry, we're like, we know they're angry. Like they don't have to say anything. They don't have to do anything. And so
that's me.
Yeah, absolutely. Me too. And like 99% of the people that I work with, because we, you know, like attracts like. So, but what happens when we have this open emotional solar plexus in our body graph is that because we feel so deeply other people's emotions, what we try to do is we try to get in before we have to feel that feeling and we try to fix, right? So we often see this in little children if they are in a household with, I don't know, an angry parent, or there's a lot of sadness or big feelings, big hairy emotions. We find that these children will learn ways to get ahead of that kind of game. So they'll become really funny kids, right? Like they'll clown around and joke and try to make everyone happy and smiling again. Or they'll learn maybe a behavior to distract the angry dad. So they'll do something naughty. So the attention goes to them, right? And not to the mum. We create some incredibly functional behaviors in those moments that then no longer serve us in adult life. But when you're talking about, you know, creating then boundaries as an adult, it can feel really uncomfortable and potentially unsafe to do so if you've got this really open emotional body, this open and energetic body. Because what happens sometimes when you create a boundary? There's maybe some negative feedback, or someone keeps, you know, pushing that boundary or overstepping that boundary, or someone might get angry at you. And so setting boundaries is again a skill. It's again something we have to practice. And regulate, continually regulating ourselves and calming the nervous system down as we do so.
So how do we deal with somebody who really gets angry at us for setting the boundary over and over because they keep overstepping the boundary?
Yeah, it's a challenging one. So my advice always is, like, firstly, you need to be really clear on what your boundary is, obviously. So when you do actually express that, like, I can do this, but I will not do that, or I will tolerate this, but I cannot tolerate that, that you're as strong in that as possible, right? It's not wishy-washy. It's not unclear. It's not, well, you know, but if in this circumstance they do this, then I'll do that. But if then they do that, I'll change it. It does need to be a loving, respectful, strong boundary, as I said, that's very much about helping them just as much as it is you. But I've had this happen. I've set a boundary with a family member and then been physically threatened. Like, I'm going to come down there and dut to you. So there's got to be some, like, real awareness about how am I supporting my nervous system through this? Because it's activating, obviously. There can be fear of retaliation and things like that. So for me and for my clients, we always want to look at, well, how are we doing a bit of a safety plan around this? So when you set that boundary and you maybe perceive that they will or expect that they will react in this way, what are you going to need? Right? Like, are you going to need a friend to talk it over with? Are you going to need a therapist to be on call for you when you set that boundary? Do you need to get out in nature? Like, really thinking about setting it up so that you can set that boundary. And even it might be, and then you cut off contact for a while with that person, or, you know, like, don't answer your phone. I've said to a client recently, we were doing some boundary work, and, oh, but I know this family member is going to ring me and harass me. Like, well, maybe you need to block their number for a while. Maybe you need to put your phone away and not look at it. Like, what do you practically need to do so that you can really hold firm in those moments? And I know that probably is an extreme example, but it's more common than you think, that retaliation. So
definitely
real practical stuff, you know, like, what do I need to do to set this boundary and hold it? And I know for some of my clients, this is why I offer my clients, when we do one-on-one work, they have voice message access to me, so we can voice message back and forth, because I know it's in the moment that you're doing it that you often need help. I've set the boundary, but now I think I'm going to take it back. You know, I need you to talk me off the ledge, like,
yeah,
talk me down, you know, and you need that person there that goes, no, you've done the right thing. Stick with it. You got this. Go for a walk. Have a shower, turn your phone off. Sometimes you need that in the moment support. So I think that's really important. That's why I do my work the way I do it. It's not just you now have to hold over for another week to tell me what happened, right?
Yes, definitely. I think it's so, especially for the people pleasing, the accommodating type. It's so easy to back down on your boundary once you see the other person is unhappy with it. And yeah. I actually really love that you said that it's okay not to answer the phone. It's okay to not engage in the conversation about the boundary. Like, you've said it and that's it. Like, the conversation is over. You can either accept it or not accept it. And, but in a soft way, as you said, not like in a, this is my boundary, but yeah. Like, I need you to respect me as much as I respect myself, or as much as I'm trying to respect myself, because it's not easy.
It's not easy. And there'll be lots of stuff that you're experiencing, like, you know, lots of obligation, lots of shoulds. There'll be lots of stories that you've got about, well, you know, it's my role or whatever, you know, there'll be stuff, so much stuff will come in. And that's why you need these spaces to just, yeah, clear the noise and the clutter and just be like, what is going to be most helpful for me here? And, you know, we need to put ourselves first more often than we do, right? Like, as you said, you're an overgiver, caring for everyone. You're just going to become more and more depleted and then have nothing, right? Nothing left. As you said, you know, you'll be like, you'll have more days like yesterday where you just can't even get out of bed and you just have no energy. So how does that serve the world? How does that help you? How does that serve the other people that you have relationships with? It doesn't. It doesn't, but it is very layered and very tricky, and I get it, and we just have to work through it step by step. And kind of taking it as it comes. And, you know, I have this really beautiful program called the Articulation Incubator, and it's just a small group of women in a voice chat. But what I love about that is that they go and set the boundary, or they go and have the conversation, and they come straight back to the group, like their little safety place, and go, oh my God, that was really hard. And I felt this, and I thought I was going to vomit. And like, he said that, and then I got angry, and oh my God, I think I stuffed it up. And just having this space to talk through the reality of it. And then to have a group of women go, you did so good. Like, oh my gosh, you should be really proud of yourself. Maybe you could say this next time, or here's some suggestions, but well done, right? It's so big and hard. And I just don't think anyone should be doing this work on their own. Like, it's really hard work, but so valuable and so rewarding when you get to a space where you are set in your boundaries. You have really beautiful, nourishing relationships around you. You have people that you can be really vulnerable with and open with. And you've maybe also, you know, ended some relationships that needed to go because they no longer nourish you, you know? It's a really beautiful space to be in.
Definitely. And I find that most of us don't find this support in our family units, and it's really important to find it outside.
Yeah, well, when you think about it, most of us are completely going against the patterns and the intergenerational way of communicating in our family. We're often the ones then that are called the disruptors and the naughty ones and the black sheep. You know, and I always look at family dynamics and family constellation. That's right. You're just too sensitive. Settle down. Calm down. Be quiet. Why are you making a big deal out of this? I look at family dynamics like a dance. So it's like, if you for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years have done the waltz in your family, this is how everyone does the dance in our family. And then you have Yael, who's like, well, I don't want to do the waltz anymore. I'm setting a boundary here, and I would like to do the tango. Like, it is going to take some time.
Everybody's
for these family members
into you.
That's right. And they're all like, what are you doing now? This is not the dance we do. This is not how you normally react. What is this boundary thing? Like, what is this? Yeah, I think it's a really great analogy. I think it's a really great analogy because it's just like,
yeah.
Well, you know, you are changing the dance steps for very good reason most often, but we also need, like, I think it also gives compassion to that the family's going to take a while to adjust to the fact that you're over here doing this other freestyle dance. And you're not doing what you've always done.
Yeah.
And so I know in my family, when I've set really strong boundaries, because I'm kind of the only one that ever has, I just had to give them time to get angry and have their tantrum and do their thing. And when I say time, years. Mm. And now we're coming back years later to a space of respect. We respect each other's boundary. There's some lines we don't cross. There's some conversations we don't have. You know, we don't need to go down that track. We do this. This is what we do. But it has taken some time to get there. But if I didn't hold that boundary, we would never have got there. We would just kept replaying the same pattern and doing the same dance. And for me, I wasn't willing to do that with my kids. I wanted change. I wanted cycle breaking stuff to happen. So I love the dance analogy. Maybe that'll help some people see that you're changing the dance moves.
Yeah. So actually the thing I wanted to speak with you about next is exactly this breaking the family patterns. And you spoke about it with setting boundaries and really being firm in the change that we want to create. So is there a way that you advise people to start doing that? Because that can be really, really difficult.
Yeah, I think it's the hardest thing you'll ever do, to be really honest. It's really big work. Because again, first is that step of like actually asking yourself, what do I want outside of conditioning from the family? Actually being able to look in on the family dynamics from the outside and realize what's actually happening. That's big awareness. That most people actually never do. You know, most people don't ever get to the place where they're like, oh, I want to change things up and this isn't working and this is not functional. This isn't healthy and we need to move things around and change things. Most people don't get there. But if you do, if you have this inkling of this isn't how I want this to continue, like this is not okay. It's about, I guess, having that first bird's eye view awareness of what actually is the dynamic here. And then, I mean, a lot of the work I do then is about listening to self, you know, and we did that work in your sessions, right? Like listening to what do you actually believe is right for you? Because I believe that everyone knows exactly what they actually want. I do truly believe that everyone knows who they are, but it can be really scary to admit it. It can be scary to go there and look at that, because that could mean that your whole reality has to shift and change. The world that you've created, the way you view the world might actually have to shift. So that work of like admitting what I want to change, what I'm not happy with, what I do want, that's another step. And then, yeah, like what, okay, well, to achieve my full actualization, to get to a space of really feeling like great in myself and feeling like I'm aligned with who I truly am, what boundaries need to be put in place? Who do I need in my life? Who do I no longer need in my life? Like, you know, you got to do a little bit of auditing, and I'm not saying cut people out, but you might take a step back from some people. You know, you might then be really choosy of who you have certain conversations with and who you don't. You know, there's some family members in my life that I just don't go there with them. I don't go too deep. You know, it's pretty surface level, and that's okay, because that's how it needs to be right now.
Focus your energy on your personal inner work.
Yeah. And, or I just know that I'm never going to get what I really crave from that person. Right. Like, you know, I wish there were family members of mine that I would have a really connective relationship with. I really grieve that intimacy and that connection, but I'm just not going to get it from them. And so, I think you can get to a place of acceptance of who they are and where they're at, and the fact that you're going to get this much of your, you know, like a small amount of your relationship needs met, but maybe not all of them there. And are you okay with that? You know, that's big. Yeah. So I think you do that little audit, and I'm making it sound like a checklist, and I know it's not, it's so difficult, but I think those are the kind of steps to be able to go, okay, now, yeah. Like, what are we breaking here? So and I look, for me, having children was a huge catalyst, obviously, of like, how am I going to parent differently here? Like, what are we carrying forward? Because there's some great stuff from my family. And what do we need to stop? What do we need to let go of? I think that having children can often be a really big catalyst for that. Because there's this legacy going forward, obviously. And I also think that for me, having children gave me an extra strength, because it was like, well, I'm doing it for them, not just for me, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So how do we start to realize what these patterns are? How do we figure it out? Because so many times it's really subconscious.
You ask such marvelous questions. I keep coming back to the body. I keep coming back to trusting when things don't feel right. You know, I think that a lot of stuff happens in family dynamics where we go, no, our body's like, our body tenses, it feels repelled by something, but the stories and the narrative is, this is what we do in the family, right? And we, oh, okay. And so we bypass that body sense. Mm-hmm. So I find that a lot of my clients will say, oh, it just doesn't, I don't feel good, or it doesn't feel right, or I feel drained, or da, da, da. It's like, okay, well, there's something not quite right there. There's something not in alignment there. And how would you like it to be? How would you like to feel when you leave that person's home or you finish a conversation with that person? So I think that, like, I keep coming back to the body for that question. And then I also think that exposure to how other families are and listening to conversations like this can also be like, oh, my family does that, or my family's not like that and I really wish they were. And, you know, you start to realize that the way our family does it or the way this friendship has been is not, doesn't have to be like that, actually. So there are two ways that I think that I have really navigated understanding, the cycles that I wanted to break. Mainly it was the ones that made me feel really awful as a little girl, the ones that shut me down, the ones that made me really sad and angry. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's really helpful to do it also with a therapist or maybe a very trusted, close friend who is very aware themselves. Do you think it's possible to do it through journaling?
I think it is. I think you have to have a deep level of understanding about yourself and awareness and an ability to cut through your own BS, you know, like, because I think sometimes I can even lie to myself in my journal. I can make things seem better than they are, you know. So I think you would, I think you'd have to have a deep level of being able to call yourself out on stuff that's like, that's not fully the truth, Carly. Really? Is that really what you feel and believe? You know? And I'm very much like, I don't think that you have to have therapy, and I don't think that you have to be in therapy for life and any of that sort of thing. If you've got a mentor or, you know, I often think that someone who's a little bit further along in life or that has, traversed a little bit of this can be just so, so helpful to have that wisdom and that experience and that hindsight kind of to look back on and give you advice. So I've got some beautiful mentors like in their 80s, you know, who always tell me, stop taking life so seriously. You got plenty of time, like da da da. And I'm like, no, I'm running out of time and life is really hard. And they're like, they just put everything in perspective for me. Because they've lived 80 years on the planet and they've seen some stuff. So I think that, yeah, it really is. And the other thing I was going to say actually with that was be very discerning about the therapist, the coach, the mentor, the friend that you're walking through this with. Make sure that there's not a lot of transference. You know, they're bringing in their own stuff, and having that color, the advice that they give you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Got to be discerning. A lot of traumatized therapists and coaches out there that shouldn't be doing the work.
Oh, that is so true. Sometimes, like, I see people that I know in my personal life, and now suddenly they're a coach or a therapist, and I'm like, no.
It's very unregulated. Yeah. It's a very unregulated space. And we have to also, you know, I think the word that's being bandied around lately is trauma bonding, and it's kind of being misused a little bit. But the essence of that is, you know, we will often find the person that can really feed into our trauma and our woundings and make us feel better in the short term. But are they actually enabling us to stay in that space, or are they actually helping us move, you know, out of that space? So you got to be discerning. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think that's not only in therapy relationships, it's in all relationships
that can happen. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Carly, I have so many more questions for you. We must do a part two.
Please. This is so fun. Let's do it.
But yeah, I just know it's getting late over the other side of the world in Australia where you are. So let's wrap up the conversation with the closing curiosity questions, and I'll keep the rest of the questions for next time.
Sure.
So the first question is, what is something you've changed your mind about?
Oh, so many things. Well, to keep it tied into our theme today, I have, through my own experience of being a mother and a wife, changed my mind about how my parents navigated their marriage, because I had a lot of thoughts about that as an 18-year-old. And having, gone through a relationship and relationship struggles and become a mum and coming out the other side, and my boys are older, I have a lot more compassion and understanding about the complexities of relationships. It's not black and white. It's not easy, and there's no manual for it. So I've completely changed my mind about, judging anyone else's relationship and how they navigate it.
Definitely. What is something you didn't think you could do and you did?
Again, one of my most, I'm really proud of setting a very strong boundary with my mother nearly 14 years ago that we both needed, and it helped actually her do a lot of healing, and it helped me have a lot of space to do healing. And I never thought that I would break that pattern in our relationship, and we're now in a really beautiful space. And I never thought I'd be able to do that. I'd never thought we would be where we are now in our relationship. So super proud of 26-year-old me that did that. It was very hard, but I did it.
I'm so proud of you too.
Thanks.
What gives you hope?
What gives me hope? My children. My boys are incredible, very awake, very aware, little humans that I think are going to do incredible healing work in the world. So they give me hope every day. When the world feels a bit big and scary and dark, I look at them and yeah, they give me hope. And when I work, when I'm in a session with a woman and I see the moment that they remember who they are and they have this like aha moment that all of the answers are inside them and everything they need is inside them, those moments just spark a bit of hope for, okay, maybe if I can help a few more people have that, then the world will change. So those things give me hope.
I love that. I love that. Thank you. And last question, what are you curious about right now?
Oh gosh, I am such a curious little squirrel. I've got so many things. Oh, I'm curious right now about the evolution of my relationships with my kids. So my boys are moving into pre-teens and then teenage years. And so I am really trying to learn from my elders and, gosh, practice letting go a little bit more. And, yeah, I'm just really curious about how I best navigate this space and time. That's what all my books beside my bed here are about at the moment. And that's what I'm really diving into, in how to create incredible, independent adults, but also like make them still visit me and love me and, and think I'm cool. So I'm really curious about that because I've never parented teenagers. So this is all new.
Yeah. And yeah, thank you for sharing that. We don't know how to do things. It's so important to find the information and the education that we need in order to be able to navigate that.
Yeah. I say to my kids all the time, I've never parented an 11-year-old before, so I'm learning. Like, sorry, you're the guinea pigs, but like, I've not done this before. You know, and the same in my marriage, you know, when we had that conversation, I'm like, I've never done this before. I've never navigated a potential separation. So how about we play with this and see what we can do? Let's stay connected. Let's stay in, you know, in respect for each other and let's figure this out, right? Yeah. I think it's dangerous when we think we know everything and have it sorted. Yeah. Love those questions.
Definitely. Is there anything else that's important for you to share?
No, I think I just want to reiterate that we're all human figuring this out. And I don't know that any of us have all of the answers and, you know, the 10-step plan to improve every relationship. I think it is just really acknowledging our humanness and being willing to be vulnerable and, yeah, giving it a crack, having a go. I just want to reiterate that.
I love that. I love that. So how can people stay connected with you, your different programs, Instagram, all of that?
Yeah. So I'm not like a really big flashy Instagrammer or social media kind of person. I'm sometimes people call me a hidden secret. I'm kind of just doing my thing and doing my work, but you can jump on Instagram at The Honest Therapist. My website is carlyanna.com, where you can see how you can, you know, work with me and be a bit more exposed to the work I do. I have recently started writing on Substack, stories from the couch, even though none of my clients lay on a couch. Well, maybe they do, but mainly they just sit on their bed or talk to me from their cars. And I'm really enjoying that. It's a little bit more personal stories, how I'm navigating things myself. And I have a podcast as well called The Honest Therapist too, where I share just different things that I'm experiencing or hearing from clients and working through. So they're the spaces I like to hang out. I'm very much into small, intimate groups, and I love direct message and chatting voicemails. So anyone can, you know, chat to me directly or message me anytime. I love a chat in that way.
Amazing. So everybody, please make sure to check out Carly's podcast, her Instagram. She gives a lot of great information there. I am so, so, so happy we did this conversation. Thank you so much, Carly. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you.
I found so many helpful tips and tools in this conversation, and I can't wait for the next one.
Thank you, honey. Appreciate it. Such an honor.
Now, after this time to nurture your mind and your spirit, we invite you to take a moment to consider others. A kind wish might come to mind. Know that what we learn becomes more valuable when we apply it and share it with others. So share this episode on Instagram stories, tag Yandara and I, or share with a loved one so that more people can benefit from it. Our hope is that the search will lead you home to who you already are, to what was always there. We'll be back next week with more inspiration, honest conversation, and insight into the energetic world around us. Thank you for listening and watching.